Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Tuesday, June 14th, 2016 Reedy City Council meeting. And at this time, I'd like to call the meeting to order. And if you would please stand with us for the invocation by Russ Robinson, the Public Works Director, and the Pledge of Allegiance by Councilman Beck.
Let us pray. Our Heavenly Father, this evening we come before you once again. We pray for our city council, we pray for our city manager, city staff, and all the others that carry the burdens of the community. Lord, we want to say a special prayer this evening for the city of Orlando, and Lord, the families that have lost loved ones, the survivors that maybe have physical or mental scars. And Lord, we ask that on the heels of a evil, senseless act, that you would provide some peace, some comfort, and some healing for those involved. And Lord, we want to pray tonight for our nation as a whole, and Lord, a nation that now more than ever really needs to seek you. And we want to pray for this meeting tonight and those in attendance, and we ask that you bless us in your name. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Please join the council in pledge to our flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, gentlemen. We have roll call, please.
Councilmember Betancourt, here. Councilmember Beck.
Here.
Councilmember Fass.
Here.
Councilmember Rodriguez.
Here.
Mayor Salino.
Here. Agenda approval. Are there any additions or deletions?
There are not, Mayor. However, I do want to point out that the minutes for the April 12th meeting that are in your packet are incorrect in your packet. However, they were posted correctly online and posted correctly for the agenda. The minutes do not reflect that Anita Betancourt was present. That's the only change to those, and so there is no change for the agenda, but I did just want to point out that your minutes won't show Anita, but the minutes that were posted online and legally posted do. Mm.
Good. And do I have a motion and a second?
Motion.
There's a second?
Second.
And moved and second. Call for the question.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodriguez?
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Fass?
Yes.
Mayor Salino?
Yes. Going into presentation. Presentation by James Ritchie, Department of Fresno County Behavioral Health.
Good evening. Thank you. I appreciate you allowing me to present to you tonight. I'm with the Mental Health Services Act and the County of Fresno, and I'm going to do a short presentation. Perhaps some of you are familiar with Proposition 63. It was a voter-approved initiative in 2004. It's a tax on millionaires. And the funds for that are to augment what is called realignment funding for existing behavioral health services. So the Mental Health Service Act funding is on top of that. And we've had Mental Health Service Act programming since 2010, when we completed our first community planning process. And we're starting our community planning process again. And it's vital that we have community input. We cannot create new programs or new plans or projects without demonstrating input from stakeholders. And you are all stakeholders. Certainly elected officials are stakeholders, but every one of you in the audience are stakeholders as well. We all have a vested interest in the mental wellness of our communities. And so I'll just present this briefly, and then I will ask folks to do a couple of things. I would like to work with the city manager, perhaps, after today, and maybe get some assistance getting into some of your communities here so that we can collect additional data, stakeholder input. But I'd like you all to also fill out a brief survey. There's four questions, which I'll go over briefly. And then also help me if you have a constituency or a group of folks that you think have a vested interest in the program planning. I would come out in the evenings, on weekends, whenever is convenient for folks, and collect that data and have a focus group. But with that, we're doing this all over the county because it's vital. So there's a whole bunch of mandates from the state for this. This is defined in the Welfare and Institutions Code. And so we have to demonstrate this. We need your input. It's vital. We can't spend the money. We can't pull the money down and then spend it if we don't have your input. And it's a lot of money, I can tell you. The Mental Health Services Act community planning process, who is it? Well, it's mandated by state law and has several requirements. Community collaboration, as I just mentioned. Cultural competency, so we have to make sure that our programs address the needs of diverse communities in our county. These include bilingual, bicultural clinicians and programs that help people on their terms in a culturally competent way. Some additional requirements here, integrated service experience. The programming is required to do a full range of services provided by multiple agencies, programs, funding sources that are comprehensive and coordinated. So a lot of these programs will be contracted out. So this is also very good for our economy. The community planning process has to be client-driven, family-driven. A client is defined as somebody who's engaged in the system of behavioral health services. And we say behavioral health services, which includes, there's a nexus we now understand between mental illness and substance use disorders. Oftentimes people who have a substance use disorder are really just engaged in medicating themselves from their symptoms, whatever they be, depression or some, you know, more serious mental illness. We are now wellness, recovery, and resilience focused, which means that it's a systems change where we are person-centered and we are basing our programs on evidence. So we know that the outcomes are going to be better than they have been in the past. This is our timeline for our community planning process. We are between May 1 and June 30th. And we want to collect the data by the end of June. So this is we need to get this done so that we can get these plans going and based on what the community says. We don't know what those plans are going to be. We have to collect the data, right? And then in July, we will have a series of publicly announced meetings where you are all certainly encouraged to continue to participate because we will be prioritizing the data that we collect. And we will announce those meetings in newspapers. The contacts that I make through this process, I will also follow up on as we engage with additional meetings that are, you know, more plan-oriented. Right now, we're in the data collection phase. Our goal is to have the plan submitted to the state by November 30th. So it's a fairly quick turnaround, but we've done this before, and we know it works. So again, who? Families, clients, relevant professionals, providers, representatives, and leaders of underserved communities and communities in general. Where? Obviously, I'm here at a scheduled meeting. We're going to go to whatever meeting we can hitch a ride on. So we look forward to assistance in that regard throughout the county and in particular here in Reedley. And when? That's whenever is convenient for you all, because we find that a lot of people are at work between 8 and 5 when I'm at work, and I can't really collect data only between 8 and 5. I have to collect data when it's available, and sometimes that's on weekends and in the evenings, and we're happy to come out. So the data collection, we will facilitate stakeholder input through 4 targeted open-ended questions, and I'm going to go over those questions briefly, and I have a stack of those here. We're going to collect data by writing it down as one would in a brainstorming session in focus groups. I'm going to collect sheets, you know, sign-in sheets to demonstrate that you all participated, if you're willing, and collecting surveys. Okay. So the first we're going to have 4 questions, and they're going to be very simple. Have you or a loved one ever needed help from DBH or a provider, DBH, Department of Behavioral Health, or one of our contracted providers? If so, were the services helpful? If not, let us know what was wrong. What was not satisfactory, so we can change that. If you haven't needed help, would you know where to go or what to do if you or a loved one needed services? And we often find that a lot of people, you know, the stigma associated with mental illness is so strong that oftentimes typically it prevents people from actually seeking out services. And if we can address an individual's mental health challenges earlier, then it's easier. It's like a car problem, right? If your fan belt is starting to fray, you want to change it before it totally goes and you're, you know, 100 miles down the road, right? It just gets more expensive and harder to treat. So if we want to really address the stigma and make sure that people understand what to do and where to go. Question three, do you have any recommendations for improving services or for additional services in your community? Maybe you don't know about the services in your community. We need to hear that so that we can, you know, itemize those and create more as the need exists. Mm-hmm. And what do you see as the biggest problem in your community regarding mental health? And I want to say mental health / substance use. Okay, because again, there's that nexus between substance use and mental health, untreated mental health. And so these four questions may take some time to think about. Maybe not. Maybe you're ready to go with your responses. And I would appreciate it if I could leave these here with you all, and then you could fill them out, and then I can collect them. I can pick them up at a later time, and you could do it in the convenience of your own time, if you'd like. You know, in your privacy, your own privacy. We also have an online version of the very same questionnaire that you can respond to. And again, I want to reiterate that I'm eager to come out and do focus groups more be there in person with a group of folks and some, you know, whiteboard or some big 3M pads and writing down the ideas like a brainstorming session. We find this is very, very helpful. We have developed some excellent programs as a result of the community planning process that we did last time. And they're really benefiting the communities, and we just need to do more of it. How much time do I have? Another minute or so?
Sure.
The Mental Health Services Act has five different programs, really. I didn't include capital facilities because that's going to be determined at a higher level with leadership, you know, county supervisors, that sort of thing. But as far as the other four components of Mental Health Services Act, we have innovations funding, which is about $4.5 million as of July 1st. And so we need to develop plans. These are typically programs that are, they haven't been done before. We have community supports and services. These are wraparound kinds of programs for communities that need them. And prevention and early intervention projects. In your schools right now, we have PEI programs that we put in place as a result of the community planning process. And the workforce education and training component, which is designed to both help communities develop career pathways with high school students and with college students. We have loan forgiveness programs so that if an individual decides to go into, get an education in a behavioral health field, and work for the public mental health system, we forgive their loans, which is huge. And we have other kinds of activities that we do through the workforce education and training. I know I'm going over this very, very rapidly. Let me tell you that please feel free to call me or email me if you want more information. If you want to have a more in-depth conversation about what it is we're doing, I'm happy to do that. As I noted, Innovations has $4.5 million available, and our goal is to increase access to underserved groups, increase quality of services, promote interagency collaboration, so working with law enforcement, for example, working with first responders, working with city managers and all kinds of groups out there, schools, primary care, rec centers, whatever, older adult care facilities. Whatever nexus we can find with behavioral health, and there are many nexuses, so we're confident that there's lots of things that we can do. So these are some of the programs, just by way of demonstration that the community planning process does work. The innovations programs that we have right now that are being moved over from the innovations funding into our full stream funding. We have the AB 109 Outpatient Mental Health and Substance Use Disorder Services. We have the Holistic Cultural Education Wellness Center. This is a prevention and early intervention program. We have all kinds of programming that provides outreach and engagement to communities on mental health prevention and early intervention through activities, through art, through Zumba, yoga, all kinds of different activities that are good for folks that are healthy. Cooking classes, but embedded within all of that are messaging about, reducing stigma associated with mental illness and making sure that people understand what to do and where to go as they need help. And through all of that, people do come in and say, well, you know, I have a cousin or I have a niece or, you know, a friend or somebody who needs services, and we get them dialed in much more easily that way. The integrated discharge team and the supervised overnight stay program, those were all innovations programs. Our community supports and services programs include our children's co-occurring as substance use disorder and serious emotional disturbance, so kids abusing drugs, children's outpatient expansion, family behavioral health court, adult RISE, adult co-occurring, full service partnership, FSP means full service partnership, which means we provide housing, we do all kinds of different things to make sure that we wrap around services around these individuals who need them. Adult housing and recovery, rural FSP, Children's Act, which is assertive community treatment, Children's SMART model of care, transition age youth expansion, transition age youth services and supports, AB 109 full service partnership, older adult expansion, and children's school-based rural and metro. So again, in your schools, you have projects through this. Our PEI programs are numerous here. I'd be happy to go into all of these with you at a later time. I know my time's running out, but there's lots of different things that we're engaged in. And I put these down here to demonstrate to you that the community planning process does work, because every one of these projects are community-based. They're based on the individual input that we collected. And we know they work because our some of the people in power don't necessarily like them, because they don't comport with their ideas from behind their desks about what should be done in the communities. But it doesn't matter. What we need to hear is what's going to be working for the community, the people who are engaged with the services. They need to tell us what they need. We need to hear what they need. We can't do it. We know that we can't do it sitting behind a computer anymore. Mm-hmm. So this is our website. I don't know if you can write it down, or I can, well, we can leave this up perhaps. you can contact, Sylvia. And get the email address if you want to contact me, or fill out the online survey instead of this one. Any questions?
You, Mr. Richard, you were talking about this program been done before, and be nice to see some of the things that took place then that benefited cities or whatever, the public, so that we could take a look at it and see the things that materialized out of it.
Yeah, well, a lot of them, for example, like in the prevention, early intervention, we have the K-12 school-based programs, so positive behavioral interventions and supports, PBIS. That's in a lot of the schools throughout the county, and I believe they're in Reedley schools as well. And this is funded through the prevention, early intervention, Mental Health Services Act prevention, early intervention funding. And it exists primarily because the stakeholders that were involved at the time, you know, teachers, and, you know, we're going to go to schools as well. We're going to, you know, we're going to hit everywhere we can, right? But, I would love to, you know, love to show you Blue Sky Wellness Center. I'd love to show you our horticultural therapeutic gardens. We have these, when we met with the Southeast Asian populations, for example, a lot of these folks are living with multi-generational PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, because they're refugees from war-torn countries. They haven't had a homeland for a number of generations. And so they carry this, what's called multi-generational PTSD. We see it in a lot of different communities. Mm. And through meeting with them, it became clear to us that what they wanted was some way for us to engage that community in a way that was non-stigmatizing. They didn't have to walk into some county building. So what we did is we created these community gardens. Mm-hmm. And on these community gardens, we have platforms and we do presentations on just sharing knowledge about what services are available. Mm-hmm. We do this through interpreters and through clinicians who are bicultural, bilingual. And we engage the folks at these community gardens. So this allows them to do some recreational activities, gardening. along with receiving some important messaging about mental well-being and services that are available. And I'd be happy to give you a tour if you'd like to see some of these, you know, some of these things, mm-hmm. for sure. And we've expanded the horticultural therapeutic community gardens. We just recently opened one at FIRM, Fresno Interdenominational Refugee Ministries. They opened one for the African refugee population. We have one in West Fresno. We have several. The Native Americans opened one down at the river, down at the San Joaquin River Basin, which is actually beautiful. It has all kinds of native plants, and it's just absolutely gorgeous. But so that's just one example among many. But I'd be happy to give you a tour of some of these things and show you, you know, what happens. Okay. Yeah.
Listen, we appreciate your presentation. I think let people look at the forms and see what comes up with this.
Yeah, I mean, it would be helpful. We really need your support. We need your support to get data, right? And in turn, I can promise you that we will make sure that, we will invite you. We want you to be part of this process ongoing, right? Behavioral health, people have a hard time with it because there is such a stigma around mental illness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people just kind of want to throw up their hands and say, I kind of want to avoid that. But what we realize is if we start focusing on wellness, right, mm-hmm. then we don't have the substance use problems. Mm-hmm. Then we don't have the domestic abuse. We don't have the, you know, lost, wages and, missed work days and loss of job and that sort of thing. We have people who are more successful in schools. I mean, it sounds all Pollyannish, big, you know, pie in the sky, but it's true. I mean, if we can address our mental health fundamentally, mm-hmm. then we're all going to be better off in our communities, right? So.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I have families that I work with, and a lot of them, because of the language barrier, and like you say, the stigma, they don't even want help, or they just hide behind it, and it mm-hmm. affects their families and their kids, and it just trying to let them know that it's all right, there's help for it, you know, and I don't think a lot of us are aware of it unless we have somebody mm-hmm. that it has affected. I have a daughter that turned out she was bipolar, and it was at a later age, but I didn't know started to see some behavior, and then finally I started getting some help and realized that what it was. But if you don't know,
right,
it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard. Uh-huh. But I think that is so important. I think that's why we have a lot of homeless people, yeah. and like you say, domestic violence and crime. It's their behavior mentally, and there is help.
There is help, and we know that if mm-hmm. when individuals get treatment, it's effective over 90% of the time. Effective where there's a serious increase in well-being, in ability to hold a job, ability to maintain, you know, cook and clean for yourself. I mean, mm-hmm. all the markers that we know exist for that define what wellness means. Mm-hmm. We know if people get treatment and they stay in treatment, the treatment has to match their needs, right? And we know that it works. But again, the stigma, the lack of services, the barriers are real. You know, I mean, there is no mental health facility, you know, overnight stay here in Reedley, right? We barely have them in Fresno. But the fact of the matter is, we have money now, and we need to do things that will help our communities, all of our communities. So,
I have a comment. As you do your planning, oftentimes the local communities, you know, many times those type of services are based like in Fresno or Clovis area in the metro area. And I know oftentimes people can't get to Fresno. They don't have transportation. They don't want to go that far. There could be multiple reasons for that. They're afraid.
Right.
So anytime that you can, as you're coordinating services for our whole county, that you can bring them out to the Coalingas, to the Reedleys, to the, you know, to the outlying areas as maybe centers That would really be helpful to our local communities.
Yes, respectfully, absolutely. I 100% agree, which is why we need you guys to help us document this, mm-hmm. right? I can't say it. I can't write it down. Mm-hmm. I need you guys to write it down. I mean, I can write it down, but I'm one voice. Right? Even though I work in the department, I'm one voice. Mm-hmm. I need you all to write it down. Mm-hmm. You want, you know, what services are needed here? Okay?
I had a question. Is there a reason why you don't go through the schools to collect some of your data? And like just the question that we ask, we don't know how a community needs to be serviced unless you assess it. I understand that. You examine what the needs are. But is there a reason why you don't go through the schools, since they have multiple ways of communicating with families and they've already have probably charted, you know, where there's domestic violence, where there's high alcohol or drugs, which is correlated to the mental health status and so forth.
Yeah, unfortunately, there are FERPA laws, like HIPAA laws. School administrators are, you know, prohibited from sharing certain kinds of data about students. But we do meet with, the schools are part of our stakeholders, so we do meet with them as well. So,
I'm just thinking, the reason I asked that, because I think that, I know what you're saying, because I did education for a while, there's certain things you can't share, but when you're conducting these type of surveys and you're wanting to get some informative data, every school, you know, that's funded, both state and federal, I don't know if the private schools do it, maybe you can help me with that, but they have a school site council. Those school site councils, you know, are comprised of across the border in the community. You have from, you know, bilingual site council to a regular site council where presentations are made to those groups. And, you know, having a survey like this that could be disseminated there and for them to be guided and filled out, you know, I think that's one way that you can achieve your goal. I mean, that's just a suggestion, but I just think, I mean, we have numerous schools here in Kings Canyon. So, and then in the outlying areas too, from Great Western to Navalencha to even up in the foothills. But I just think that that'd be something to think about, because I think that you would be able to get, those are the, in my mind, those are the parents that are connected, and those are the parents that are going to answer these surveys, you know, in a positive way. And they're used to surveys, because they're giving surveys throughout the course of the year, in the fall, in the spring, and so forth. So.
Well, thank you for that. And let me assure you that we will be going to schools. I don't know if we're going to hit every single school, but we are definitely working with schools as well, school districts. And we do have K-12 school-based programs, so we do provide services, direct care services.
There may be one way to cover the schools, because I know they have a district-wide council, mm-hmm. so it represents all the schools. There's one. Maybe that you could achieve that that way.
I'd just like to make one comment. I think Council Member Fast really hit on a subject that if we have the services close by, because being in the business, you're going to understand, many times when somebody wants help, they want the help now. And if you put it off, they change their mind. And if you've got someplace where you can get these people to a facility right away, is some of the biggest things you can do for them, because people that have mental instability often change their minds rapidly anyway. And so the sooner you can get them into a site where they can get some immediate help, I think is real important. So I'm kind of like her. I think, what are we going to do for the Kalingas and the Reedleys? And,
right.
Yeah, so that's what I would be really focusing on, is, you know, the rural areas that where we can get somebody to help right away, instead of, hey, I'll get you up there tomorrow, and then you go look for them, and they're gone already. So
the kinds of things to think about in that regard would be, how can cities help us? How can we find space?
Right.
You know, maybe we wouldn't be there, you know, 5 days a week. Maybe we'd be there 2 days a week, and even one day a week would be better than none, right?
Yes.
So, again, these are things that we need to collect the data, and then we can prioritize the data at our upcoming meetings, the stakeholder prioritization meetings, where we can then start prioritizing. Okay, we got a pot of money in this particular component of Mental Health Services Act. We've got a pot of money in this one and a pot of money in this one. How are we going to use these funds? What's the priority based on the stakeholders who are present? Mm-hmm. So, and again, I will communicate with you all when those stakeholder meetings will be. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, maybe we can hold one out here in Reedley.
Yes.
One of those stakeholder meetings, you know. I'd be happy to do that, you know, in July at some point.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation, Mr. Richards.
Thank you all.
Going into public comments, provide an opportunity for members of the public to address the council on each item of interest to the public within the council's jurisdiction and which are not already on the agenda this evening. It's a policy of the council not to answer questions impromptu. Concerns or complaints will be referred to the city manager's office. Speakers should limit their comments for not more than 3 minutes. No more than 10 minutes per issue will be allowed. For items which are on agenda this evening, members of the public will be provided an opportunity to address the council as each item is brought up for discussion. Is there any public comment at this time? We have two individuals. If we could have your name and address, please.
Hi.
With the mic roll, please.
Hi, Eugene Croker. I understand that Chief Garza has worked with this juvenile justice system with some good success. That's good. As far as Chief Garza working to stop El Nopal Bakery from blowing its horn at night and in the daytime, he is not worth a damn. All of you have been told, or a lot of you have been told about this. He's been told about it. And he still decides not to do nothing about it. If you have any questions, you can ask him. Thank you.
And I will be pleased to provide the council with a memo on this item this week.
Good evening, members of the council. I'm Anthony Jewell. I'm here to represent the Reedley Historical Society this evening. And I'd like to bring to your memory the fact that you discussed microwave dishes on the water tanks that you see in the photos, or the photo that you see in front of you. And for you folks, it's the same thing I'm pointing to in the back. They have the screen on both sides of the room, so. That's the microwave dish. There's a small one over here on the side. You labored for some time over whether or not to allow a vendor or provider to put multiple dishes. Your concerns were the appearance and the historic value that those water tanks provide to this community. We've looked at them without those dishes for a long time and appreciate that. Sometime, you have to look over the fence to see how your neighbor's doing with his microwave dishes. Of course, being a good neighbor, you won't repeat that neighbor's name. You'll be discreet. And so with that, I appreciate that you not mention that neighbor's name, but that's what we could have had if we had not had your deliberations for the city of Reedley, for our historical society, and the value that those tanks, though one day they may not have any water in them, but I suspect they'll be there for long after we're gone. And so we want to thank you for your deliberations, and if we could move forward, it doesn't get better. So that's what we have. And I want to thank you on behalf of the Historic Society for leaving us with this image, rather than the one of our unnamed neighbor. Thank you.
Any of the public comment? Seeing none. Notice to the public, consent agenda items are considered routine in nature and voted upon as one item. Under the consent agenda category, a recommended course of action for each item is made. Any council member may remove an item from the consent agenda in order to discuss and or change the recommended course of action, and the council can approve the remainder of the consent agenda. A council member's vote in favor of the consent agenda is considered and recorded as a separate affirmative vote in favor of each action listed. Motions in favor of the consent agenda are deemed to include a motion to waive the full reading of any ordinance on the consent agenda. For adoption of ordinance, only those that have received a unanimous vote upon introduction are considered consent items. Would any council member wish to remove an item?
I'd like to remove items 7, 10, and 11, please.
Item 10 and 11.
Any others? And 13, I'm sorry. Lots of pages.
And 13?
Mm-hmm.
Any others?
For me, would be 12. I just have a question on that.
So we're looking at 7, 10, 11, 12, and 13.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'll make a motion.
Is there a second?
Mr. Mayor.
Oh, excuse me. Is there any public comment on this? Seeing none. There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Second. Call for the question.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Fast?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mayor Salinas?
Yes. Going to item number 7, approve and authorize the city manager to execute a recycling service agreement with PNS Disposal. Public Works, Mr. Robinson.
Hey, good evening. Be happy to answer any questions you may have on this item.
Probably just, if you would, just review briefly your overview of this item and tell us the reason why the recycling agreement is changing and what's happening with recycling just in general in our area. Thank you.
Yeah, it tends to go, recycling is very cyclical and it does follow gas prices, believe it or not. When gas prices trend downward, plastic is a petroleum product, and so oil and gas on the market are inexpensive, and a lot of manufacturers choose to buy or purchase or use new plastics rather than to deal with recycled plastics. Mm-hmm. So we have this kind of dynamic going on that when gas prices dip down, recyclables supply and demand is weak, and pricing for recycling takes a nosedive at times. Mm-hmm. We've had 2 years of low gas prices, and now the recycling market is struggling greatly. So we were getting $20 per ton for our recyclables from Pena's, that was a very good price. The city of Reedley has very clean recyclables. Our city does a very good job. Our residents do a very good job of keeping trash out of the recyclables. And if we have over a certain percentage of contamination, then the city gets charged back for that, because all trash put into the blue can has to be hand-picked, you know, at the recycle. So people have to hand pick out each piece of trash that you put in that blue can. So long story short, that's where we're at right now with the recycling market is low. Of course, on the flip side of that, the solid waste division is saving money with the low fuel prices.
So we're looking at about $26,000 that's going to be lost in this next budget period. And how will that be reflected in the budget?
It does look like we'll probably have approximately $26,000 shortfall in revenue. On the flip side of that, again, we're saving about $10,000 to $15,000 a year in fuel.
Okay.
So we have a difference of $11,000 to $16,000 shortfall.
Okay.
Considering that the division has $3.2 million of revenue each year, the $11,000 to $16,000 shortfall is not something we can work with.
Thank you, Russ.
Sure.
With this particular outfit, which is Pena, right?
Correct.
We are correct in saying that he's one of the few that will give us a return on recycling? Or is there other...
So far, yeah, I see kind of what you're at. I hope I understand what you're asking. There's cities all across the nation right now that are having to pay to get rid of the recyclables. So far in California, that really hasn't hit yet. But the recyclers that will take our product are getting fewer and fewer because they have to be set up. It has to be profitable for them still. So we did put this out for bid. The highest bid that we got was $7.50 from a company in Fresno. But when you consider how light recyclables are, you know, our a truck full of recyclables weighs about 3 to 4 tons, one of our garbage trucks. So we can carry about 3 or 4 tons of recyclables at a full garbage truck. So it doesn't make economic sense for the extra $10, for staff time and the extra distance for our trucks to haul to Fresno.
The other question I had was, so this agreement is like for 3 years, 36 months? So during that time frame, if Peña comes to us and says, you know what, folks, it's far more expensive for me now, say after the first year or 18 months, and I'm not going to be able to afford to pay you guys or reimburse you guys $5, the $5 that we're talking about, what happens with that?
Well, in the agreement, we have a stipulation that if the, you'll see on the last page of the agreement, there's a pulp and paper index. This is kind of a forecast, a recycling forecast that is used monthly by buyers and suppliers as a basis for recyclable pricing. In the agreement, there's a stipulation that if the price ever goes into an even or a negative, if we have to start paying them, we can opt out of the agreement within 60 days. So if Peña's did approach us and say, hey, according to the pulp and paper index,
So we would consider opting out if he came to us a year from now saying, like, my company can't afford to give you guys the $5 that we talked about originally on the agreement.
Correct. At that time, the city would explore all of our options.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Sure. Okay.
Any other questions of Mr. Robinson? Seeing none. Any public comment on this? Seeing none.
I'll make a motion to approve.
All right. Second.
Moved and second. Call for the question.
Councilmember Fast?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mayor Salina?
Yes. According to item number 10, adopt resolution number 2016-058, authorizing the submittal of a grant application to the Fresno County Council of Government for Measure C New Technology Funds in partnership with the City of Reedy College, the City of Mendota, CalSTART, and is it Mazzy?
Mm-hmm.
Mazzy Flying Service for deployment of electric aircraft in flight training service. Turn it over to City Manager.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Councilmember Fast, did you have some questions on this?
I just wanted to probably have you just comment on just base real care quickly just what this is and what we're looking to do.
Sure.
With that.
Sure.
Thank you.
The specific item tonight before you is simply authorizing submittal of the grant, and if we are successful in getting the grant, we'll do a much bigger public presentation. Specifically under the, I'll call it now, the old Measure C, which is the Fresno County Transportation Sales Tax Measure C, there is a specific pot of money called the New Technology Fund, and it's been building millions of dollars in that fund since Measure C came about. The intent of the fund is that it only be spent on innovative new technologies that are out there that can benefit Fresno County and transportation-related areas. We have partnered with CalSTART and specifically Joseph Oldham, who formerly was the sustainability manager in this area for the City of Fresno and surrounding areas. He went to work with CalSTART. He's also a pilot, so that's how this kind of came about. We've been working with CalSTART, the City of Mendota, Reedy College, Mazzy Flying Service, and our own airport folks to see if we can begin a fairly innovative flight science program through Reedley College that would use these electric aircraft to go between Reedley and Mendota for flight training hours for students. So it would not adversely impact our air quality because these are electric motors. They would bring in these electric planes from Europe where they are flying. Right now they're not currently flying in America broadly. There are a couple here, but not in any mass. So we would be really the first in the nation that would be doing this kind of thing with electric aircraft. And so it's a very innovative program. It would allow students to earn flight hours. And since it's through Reedley College, it would allow students who might otherwise not have an opportunity because they come from maybe low-income homes or that sort of thing to learn to be pilots and get their flight training hours. And so it's a great opportunity. We hope we're successful on getting this grant. And if we are, it would come back to the council for authorization of acceptance of the grant. And then we would obviously do a bigger public presentation at that time.
I just was real excited when I saw this. It seems really innovative, and I see a lot of different parties working together to make this happen, and that's probably something COG is looking for also.
Absolutely, and I would absolutely be remiss if I didn't mention that Councilmember Beck has been working with us from the get-go on this. He and Joseph Oldham had conversations. He's our COG representative, and so he was the one who pulled me aside and said, what do you think about this? And do you think we should go for it and partners and all of that? And so he really helped push this along. And I think it just shows our representation is so strong on COG, what we have right now. So I want to thank Councilmember Beck for doing that and keep our fingers crossed that we're successful in the grant.
Nice thing about it, the city's not asked to put any out-of-pocket funds.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
That's good.
Yeah.
All right. What I like about this, I mean, if we were to get the grant, is just like how it's, you know, what it's going to do for Reedley College and how it, you know, just expands our curriculum there. And I don't know, in my mind, these guys are always talking about the pollutants in the air and what we're causing and so forth. Well, I mean, this is, to me, why wouldn't they fund something like this? Or why wouldn't we get the grant? In other words, because I just think that... again, it's the old cliche. It's like this is a no-brainer.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of win-win for, you know, not only for offering that particular class or that curriculum to the students, but also, as you mentioned, not polluting the valley or causing more pollution anyway.
Yeah.
And thank you, Mr. Beck.
Well, I would be amiss if I didn't think Mayor Silva of Mendota too, because he came to me and says, let's see if we can't get together. And they're not using their airport. And he says, what do you think about these electric planes? And I says, I fell in love with them when Odom started talking about them at COG. And I says, you know, that looks something that would be so neat that we could put, if we could get that at our airport and get maybe students involved in flying here. And it's really an inexpensive way to put you behind a stick on a plane. And and when Mayor Silva said, we're not getting any use out of airport, and I thought, and he says, you think maybe Reedley and we could do something? I said, let's give it a try. So Robert also had a lot to do with this, so it's important to give him some credit with the what's due.
That's great.
Mayor?
Excuse me, Tony. Any other, I'll let you talk a bit. Any other council questions? See none, public comment.
I was out of order, but on the other, I apologize, but on the other hand, you move quickly, and I didn't want to miss the opportunity to remind you that I'm on your airport commission. And we would certainly encourage this program. If there's anything that adds to our utilization of the Reedley Airport, adds to the funding that we also get in other ways, and we're excited about this, so encourage your vote on the positive.
Great.
Thank you.
Any other public comment on this? Seeing none, turn it back to the council.
Making a motion to approve.
I'll second it.
Moved and second. Call for the question.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Faust?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck? Bettencourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mayor Salino?
Yes. Going into item number 11, consider the following items A and B for the City of Reedley's fiscal years 2016-2017 Landscaping and Lighting Maintenance District number 1 assessment. A is adopt resolution number 2016-059, approving the engineer report setting for the proposed assessment. And B, adopt resolution number 2016-060, setting forth the notice of intention to levy and collect the annual assessment and establishing a date for the public hearing and consideration of thereof. Engineer, Mr. Robertson.
Thank you. John Robertson, City Engineer. I can answer any questions on this item.
Let's take A first. We'll take each one.
Okay. Well, I can put them together. That's fine. So how do we go about doing this? This is just a review of what the costs are going to be for this upcoming year?
Yes, each parcel's looked at as far as the cost that they're putting into the program right now. And then the index is applied, the CPI index is applied to each one and increased per the CPI index, excuse me. And then any new ones that are added in are also put into this at this time, put into the LLMD.
Okay. So is there a point at which we maybe would not have to do an increase for this these areas?
That would be a decision I believe that council can make each time we come to present the CPI index to you to increase it. That's the decision that can be made.
And specifically, Russ, if you could stand at the podium so that you can kick me vocally if I say something amiss here. But the point at which we would see that maybe CPI increases aren't needed is when the private sector levels out somewhat. These LLMDs, for the most part, are done by private sector contract. And we noticed that the contracts increased due to workers' comp insurance increases, medical increases. We now have our private sector companies dealing with sick leave that they have to provide their workers. And so as the contracts increase, the cost gets passed along. So we hope to see this leveling out and we won't have to go forward. At this point, we actually take in less money than it costs to provide the service. So we're still behind the eight ball. And there are several, I'm not remembering the exact number, but several LLMDs where CPI escalators were not built into those LLMDs. And so they are at the original pricing from years and years and years ago. And we subsidize those LLMDs. So those particular residents are not paying the price, the full price of what it takes to provide the service. But we do hope that as the California economy levels out and we stop seeing so much legislation being passed that impacts these small businesses, that we would see those pricing level out, and we certainly would never charge more to the LLMDs than it costs to provide the service.
So the revenue that's collected right there is not enough to provide the service. Is that due to the formula?
Well, it has to do with the formula. It has to do with the cost of the service increasing beyond what we're able to charge in a CPI. Several years ago, what we were dealing with was the really high gas price, and so we resubsidized on that. Right now, what we're noticing is all of the little regulatory items that are impacting small businesses, like the part-time sick leave, we have workers' compensation changes, all of those things we notice are impacting our small businesses as well, and they pass those costs along to us.
Okay. Thank you.
I would say that our minimum wage also probably kicked it up too because.
Thank you. That's a huge one. Thank you. Yeah, minimum wage increase as well. Yeah.
Any other council comments on this? Scott, can we take?
You could do them both at the same time. Yeah.
All right. Another council comment. Is there any public comment on this? See none. Go to the council for their wishes.
A motion. So this is just approving the engineer's report.
You can take both of them.
Okay.
It's approving the engineer's report and calling for the public hearing on this.
Correct.
On July 12th. So this action we're asking tonight does not increase the rates.
Right.
It solely calls for the public hearing.
I'll make a motion to approve.
Okay.
Second.
Call for the question.
Councilmember Fast?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodriguez?
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Mayor Cellino?
Yes. Going into item number 12, adopt resolution number 2016-061.
You're up again.
For the next one, too.
Mine's just a simple question.
Pertaining to the San Joaquin Valley Railroad crossing agenda to the Reed Avenue and North Avenue intersection, A and B. A is granting authority to the city manager to sign the construction and maintenance agreement between the city of Reedley and the San Joaquin Valley Railroad for improvements to the railroad infrastructure associated with the Reed Avenue Improvements Phase 1 project, and B, granting authority to sign a letter of agreement for the maintenance of sidewalk within the railroad right-of-way. Mr. Robinson.
Answer any questions regarding this item.
On the executive summary, page 2 of 2, you talk a little bit, I think it's 1, 2, 3, 4, the fifth paragraph, starting off with additionally.
Mm-hmm.
We talk a little bit about concrete and then as far as asphalt, and we're going in the direction of just doing that straight concrete, right?
Correct.
But by doing that, there's some cost that is affixed to that, right?
The only cost would be if there is any repairs that have to happen. It would be at our cost to keep it concrete. Otherwise, the railroad would come back fixing it to make it asphalt. That's all they will maintain, would be an asphalt surface.
So if there was there's a piece of asphalt, let's see if I understand you correctly, a piece of asphalt, then they would take the responsibility.
They would have the responsibility for it, correct.
On their calendar when they get around to it, just like
exactly.
Caltrans, right?
Exactly. We wouldn't have any control over that.
Okay, and then, but if we put sidewalk, then it's...
We're not only taking
the aesthetics are better, but
that's right, and we're taking responsibility for the maintenance of it. But the railroad still has liability and issues in there in their right of way.
Yeah, that was my next, next thought or next question was like going from concrete to asphalt, then concrete. You know, the liability that we could incur.
There's a difference in how they wear. Asphalt, I'm sorry, concrete can last a little bit longer. Asphalt tends not to. There's a little bit more maintenance required to keep it. In good condition, so there's always the potential that we might have some settling and other things that happen across it, because it wouldn't be a consistent surface. So we felt also aesthetically it was a better kind of provided a better trail, mm-hmm. better pedestrian access.
John, a good example is that if when you get off of 99 coming to Reedy on Manning, as you pass the railroad tracks, you see that asphalt that they've worked on it a couple of times over the past year.
Yeah,
and it's rough again. Now, if you come back a little further this way, just before you get to Parlier, and I'm trying to think about the crossroad there, the signal light, they did away with the asphalt and put cement there because of all the trucks and whatever.
Right.
And it's lasting a lot for years.
Yeah.
So cement over asphalt, if there's possibility of having it, you know, cause problems, you're going the best route with cement.
Right. And the only time we're going to have any costs is if there's any maintenance to do.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We don't have to go in. This just allows us to go in and maintain it and fix it at our cost, mm-hmm. should it be required.
Right.
And there are a lot of students from the high school that go through there also on a daily basis. College too. So
correct.
It's a well-traveled little space.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions from council? Seeing none. Any public comment on this item? Seeing none, turn it back to the council. You can approve A and B together.
I'll make a motion to approve A and B.
All right.
I'll second.
Closing second. Call for the question.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Fast?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mayor Cellino?
Yes. Going into item number 13, adopt resolution number 2016-062 pertaining to the Central Valley Transportation Center construction contract, A and B. A is increasing the total construction cost for the Central Valley Transportation Center bid package 1 project to $2,170,200 for contingency purposes, and B, approving 3 contract changes to orders in the amount of $316,150 plus 27 cents. Wow. for the upgrade or change of request by Kings Canyon Unified School District. Mr. Robinson, engineer.
Thank you. Can I answer any questions on this item? What do you think?
Just probably a comment more than a question. I saw that there were a lot of dollars here going to be changing hands, and even though we are partners in this, this piece of it is going to be taken care of by Kings Canyon Unified, and there's going to be no charge to the city for these items. Is that correct?
That's correct. These items will be any overages above the CMAQ grant we have. Overages meaning any costs above the CMAQ grant that we're getting are to be handled by Kings Canyon Unified School District. This includes, is in part of that too.
Okay. Thank you. That was my question.
Any other questions of council? None? Public comment on this item? See none?
Make a motion to approve.
Second.
Call for the question.
Councilmember Fast?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodriguez?
Yes.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember
Beck? Yes.
Mayor Salino?
Yes. Going into administrative business, item number 17. Consider and approve resolution number 2016-053, which would increase sewer rate charges 2.5% beginning July 1st, 2016. Public Works, Mr. Robinson.
Yeah, good evening, Council. Russ Robertson, Public Works Director. On January 9th, 2012, City Council passed resolution 2012-001, which established sewer rates, and also it approved an annual sewer rate increase escalator of 2.5% each July 1st if needed. The purpose of establishing an annual inflationary increase of 2.5% was not only to keep up with inflation, but it was to avoid future large increases to rates in the future. The City Council has the discretion to approve an annual 2.5% increase to rates or to keep the current rates in effect for fiscal year 2016-17. Staff has spent some time carefully researching and considering anticipated operational costs for the sewer division for the upcoming year. And staff believes that sewer operations can be maintained and continue without an increase to rates at this time. Therefore, staff is recommending that Council does not approve resolution 2016-053 and that there not be an increase to sewer rates at this time. I would be happy to answer any questions about this item that you may have.
Any questions on Mr. Robinson?
Not so much, well, maybe it relates to it, but not so much on like the increase, but you know how we had the emergency this past year, so that wouldn't have an, what if we had one or two of those this coming year? With this increase help assist in covering some of those expenses, or do we have enough if we had another catastrophe like that?
It's a great point. I'm glad you brought that up. In fact, if we hadn't received a sizable insurance reimbursement for that Reed Avenue sewer main emergency project, then I think our recommendation would be different this evening.
Well, I think the public would be happy if there's no increase for a year. Any other questions of Mr. Robinson?
Yes, I have a question. Okay. Is this one of the, or part of the loan refinance package that was done a couple of months ago? On
for sewer, do you want to talk about that? It's water and, this was, we did refinance this bond, correct, a couple of months ago.
Okay, so that would have some impact also on this overall fund and
yes.
Savings that we're receiving.
That is correct, yeah.
From that?
Correct.
Okay, so it's multiple things. Well, I appreciate this. I'm usually saying, why do we have to do this again? So I will be in favor of making a motion to...
And
no increase in this section.
And technically, I do want to tell the council that this was one that was a little awkward to word. Because it's a policy decision of the council, we felt it important to bring the resolution forward so that the council makes the decision on this. Mm-hmm. But because you are not adopting the resolution, no formal motion is required. We simply do not adopt the rates. No motion is required.
Mm-hmm. So. Okay, so we just...
just leave it alone.
And then this would become, because of what was established in 2012, it would continue to come back to the council, right?
For on an annual basis, correct.
On an annual basis and examine whether we want to do it or not.
Yes, now, I do think it's important to note that we can't double dip, so we can't say next year if we run into issues this year, you can't double the CPI because we didn't do it this year. So mm-hmm. we forego the opportunity altogether. But we do think it's a, you know, Russ and I had some good conversations sitting down to say we think it's important for our community. We're approaching them with water rate increases. We really, we attacked that Reed Avenue project and the insurance hard so that we could get money recouped for our community. So we think it's important that the community understand that we don't always raise rates when we're able to. So I do want the council to understand that next year we can't do this year's CPI on top of next year's CPI.
The only thing that, you know, for me is like just being, you know, continuing to see where we're at with our fund, you know, and continuing to exercise prudence as far as like, I know we got reimbursed through the insurance, but you know, we can't sit here and say if and so we had another situation that's going to be an automatic. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's a fine line, you know, because you don't do it, and then you have that situation, and then you're really looking at just expending your budget and then asking for even budget transfers and other things when you run it. So I know we don't need it this year, but for me, it's always, I'd rather be, like they say, safe than later on saying like, man, you know, we didn't, because we can't foresee, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. But if it, you know, we take staff's advice and you know, I know that they look closely at every fund in our budget in its entirety. And if you're saying that we're okay, then we're okay. But I guess my question would be, if we have something like this that was to occur on a different section of the community or so forth, are we more safe in saying, like, it would be covered by insurance, or that's something that the insurance, they send their people out and they evaluate that?
It is on a case-by-case basis, whether it's covered by insurance. There's always an associated risk, you know, when we don't increase rates. We, just like you mentioned a minute ago, we don't have that crystal ball to see what's in, you know, the distant future. We can see what's right in front of us. And with that information, you know, staff made the determination that we could function without a...
And I, you know, I concur with, you know, staff and, you know, would say for with the council, let not have a rate increase, but it's a fine line, like I say, because we can get into to a point where we can have a tremendous, you know, situation, and then all of a sudden we're short. You know, we're short on, and it's like, you know, how cities or other municipalities, school districts, they give all these raises and they tie themselves in. And they say like, well, we're gonna sit there. You don't have to contribute more to your health packet. And then all of a sudden, 2-3 years later, now they're laying off people. It's one. So that was my only concern with that. That we just wanna make sure we're covered.
Russ, didn't, after the Reed Avenue project was completed, didn't we have something else that came up on Stanley Avenue?
We had a small collapse in an alley by Emmanuel High School. We have a pipeline that's in need of replacement on Stanley Avenue, and we did budget $200,000 for replacement of that pipeline for this next fiscal year.
Okay.
Yeah, correct.
So that's what it was. Okay. Thank you. Any other questions from council? Seeing none, any public comment on this?
I guess since we're not going to take any motion on it, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But at least give them the public any public comment. Mm-hmm. Seeing none, then we'll go to 18. Item number 18.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, honorable members of council. Lori Oaken, accounting manager. Tonight, you are being asked to take action on three resolutions regarding the 2016-17 budget and related fiscal matters. The first item is Resolution 2016-054, which will adopt the 2016-17 budget as it has been presented at the May budget workshops, along with any minute order motions that are approved tonight. Staff asks that you consider a motion to appropriate $6,000 to account 001-4250-3000 for election costs that the city will incur this November. Also at the May 17th budget workshop, there was council discussion with regard to the amount of funding for the Greater Reedley Chamber of Commerce. A minute order should be adopted if council wishes to amend the amount of $50,000 that is in the proposed budget or to place any terms on that payment. The second item before you tonight is Resolution 2016-055, which will adopt the master salary tables for all employees of the City of Reedley. In accordance with current MOUs, the salary table for GSU employees has been increased by 2%, and the table for RPOA unit employees has been increased by 4.5%. There is no cost of living adjustment for unrepresented employees at this time. However, a new title for city engineer as a department head has been added to range 81U. Part-time salaries for reserve officers reflect a slight increase in the hourly wage, which was anticipated during the budget process. The last fiscal item that you will be asked to approve is Resolution 2016-056, which governs the unrepresented employee's salary and benefit schedule. The only change is to add the title of city engineer as a department head position, which is different from the mid-management position of city engineer, which is a division leader. The adoption of these three resolutions will finalize the 2016-17 annual budget process, and with that, your staff is ready to answer any questions that you might have.
Scott, can I ask you on that one separately?
Yeah, why don't we take each one, each action separate, yes.
Okay. Let's go to item number A. Council, any questions from council?
Yes, I have a question. There's a vehicle impact fee that is a part of the Public Works Department budget. And the monies from this is monies that's from the
solid waste, correct?
Solid waste department, and it's being used for streets and roads rehab, and also for a report to for someone to go through each street and give a review of how the streets are and what the, you know. Mm-hmm. What their situation is. Anyway, I do not support using those type of funds to fund this particular item, and I was wondering if we could pull that from the general piece of the budget like we did or we're talking about with the chamber.
I think we certainly can pull that out and have a separate motion and vote on the VIF and a separate motion and vote on the chamber if the maker of the motion for adoption of the remainder of the budget acknowledges that we've pulled those two items out.
Okay. I would like to make a motion to approve the budget and pull the vehicle impact fee item as a separate item.
Do we do that now for the other one too, Nicole? For the chamber?
For the chamber. Ms. Fast, Councilmember Fast, would you be willing to also have your motion reflect that it does not include the chamber at this point? We can vote on that separately as well?
No. I think the chamber's fine where it is.
Okay, so the motion would currently stand then to adopt the budget with the chamber at the $50,000. Because that's rolled into the budget, mm-hmm. With the VIF pulled out to be voted upon separately.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're talking about that first resolution then?
Correct, yes.
Correct. Item
A. Right. Okay. Any other questions from council?
So that's a motion she's making?
That's a motion. So
okay, so we need to take a vote on it.
It'll need to be seconded, but then open it up to the public first on any comments.
Right. So any other questions from council? Seeing none? Is there any public comment on this item? Seeing none, turn back to the council for the voters. The motion, is there a second? Seeing no second.
Okay, so that motion fails for lack of a second.
Going to item B.
Let me explain the process. You could take another motion on A, and I think there may have been some confusion. You can discuss A, B, and C all together in one discussion, and then. But my suggestion is take the motions on each item separately because there may be different votes. There may be one person that might not want to adopt the budget as appropriated, but may want to adopt the other items. So that's what each vote may not be identical. But for the discussion and for public comment, we could certainly take all three at the same time.
Okay.
But when we go to making motions, then I would suggest we do them individually.
So you want to discuss all three of them right now?
I think that might be the best way to go, but it's up to you guys. So.
We'll discuss all three of them right now, and then come back and take the vote on each one at separately, one at a time. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So going into, we'll talk about the item B now. Any questions there? This is adopting master salary table. Any questions of Ms. Elkin? Seeing none, any public comment? No public comment there. Going into item C, adopt resolution 2016-056, establish a revised salary and benefit schedule. Any questions from the council? Seeing none, any public comment on this one? Seeing none. So now we need a motion for all three of them?
Yeah, we'll start with item A.
Okay.
If there's an alternative motion, I guess, for that one.
I have one.
Make a motion.
I have an alternative motion. And I want to vote on the Greater Reedley Chamber of Commerce amount separate from the budget. I think last time we had a little discussion on it, but I don't think everything was submitted at that time. But anyway, that's my motion. I'd like to pull it, and I think I had recommended or suggested some things where maybe we could give a certain amount quarterly or something like that versus all at one time.
So the specific motion on the floor then would be to adopt item A with the exception of the chamber that we'll pull out separately and a vote.
Well, I don't think we need to pull it out. If I don't get a second, well, it's right. I mean, then we do that.
Is your motion then?
My motion is to pull it out.
Okay, so to approve item A, to approve the budget as proposed, but with taking out the chamber agreement and chamber funding separate.
Right.
To vote on separately.
Yes.
Right. So that's the motion.
That's my motion.
Right.
Well, so how do you want to do the A now?
Well, that's the motion on item A, so it would need a second in order for you guys to consider that, or we move on to another motion if it's not seconded.
All right. There's a motion. Do I hear a second? Hearing none, motion dies. No.
So the intent is we keep going with motions until we get something that gets a second?
I make a motion that we adopt number A resolution 2016.
As written?
Yes, as written, -54, as written.
Okay, I'll second that one.
Now there can be a call for a vote.
Okay.
And this would include, I will just make sure that the council and the public is very clear that this is item A.
Right.
It would include the VIF as proposed funding, and it would also include the chamber at the proposed funding at the $50,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think it's important, though, for the public to understand that we need to get to a place where we approve a budget, I mean, by law. So whether we agree to all the pieces of it or not, we still need to do that.
Sure.
And there was two respective council members that Ms. Fass pulled something out, I pulled something out that we didn't get a second, but we're kind of like, we're almost like compelled to approve the budget. I mean, it's...
Well, that's why Scott and I...
I can't say, like,
yeah.
I want items 1 through 9, and you know what? I don't agree with 10 because it's all wrapped up into one budget.
Yeah, that's why Scott and I originally thought that doing minute orders for both the chamber and the VIF might allow. Might allow for a vote on the remaining parts of the budget. But what we do have right now is a motion on the table that would include the VIF and the chamber as, so it would adopt out. And you're right, there is a government statute requiring adoption of a budget by June 30th for the city.
So right now we have a motion and a second, right?
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Yes.
All right, so call for the question.
And I'm sorry, will the maker of the motion include that there is a minute order for the $6,000 addition for the election cost?
Oh, okay. That's include the minute order for the $6,000 for the election cost.
Thank you.
And this second also, Mr. Salino, if you'll approve that.
Yes.
As part of your second. Okay. So now it's ready to be voted upon.
Okay.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Mayor Salino?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Fast?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodriguez?
Yes.
Thank you very much, Council.
All right. I'm going to item B?
Item B, correct.
Okay. This is a master salary table. Do I have a motion?
I make a motion.
Second.
There's a second. Call for the question.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Fast?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mayor Salino?
Yes. On item C, establishing the revised salary and benefit schedule. Do I hear a motion?
I'll make a motion.
I'll second.
It's been moved and second. Call for the question.
Councilmember Betancourt?
Yes.
Councilmember Fast?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mayor Salino?
Yes.
Congratulations, Council. You have a budget for next year.
Going into item 19, it's just the minutes of regular council commissions, just for council information. Let's go into council reports, and started with Councilman Beck.
Yeah, that's what I was just pulling up here. See what I've done.
Busy.
Last Thursday, I attended the League of Cities in Madera. Nice presentation there. And it kind of fell into one of our representations tonight with the mental health. It was to do with the homeless.
Okay.
And so it was a very interesting night. The sad part was we didn't have a quorum there to do business, but we did get to hear the presentation. And a sergeant out of...
Sergeant Dewey.
Yeah, out of Fresno did the presentation of how they're working with their homeless. And it's amazing the scope they've come around in the last 3 years up there, from enforcement to working with the and working with different groups, just like the mental health, and it's a whole, he says it's a whole different mindset how they deal with the homeless folk. And so it's I thought it was a really good meeting. So, and that's basically all I had, was just that one item.
Okay. Member Tavon Bencourt?
Nothing.
Mm-hmm. Nothing. Council member Beck Fast.
I didn't have any places that I went on behalf of the city this last couple of weeks. I did have some questions, and I'm not sure if this is the place to ask, but I'm going to throw it out there anyway, and maybe somebody can help me with it. I had walked down to our local school, Washington School, with the intent to go have my grandkids play on the playground, and it was locked.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that Washington School, those playgrounds used to be open and a lot of kids were there playing. And just on behalf of my area, especially for the summer, is there any way we could encourage the school district to keep those areas, not the buildings, but the playground areas unlocked so that the kids could play?
You know, we have received some calls about that recently from community members at some other schools, and what we were told by the school district is there is an issue of liability and vandalism, and so they have been locking the sites. We certainly can go back and ask if for the summer months, but we'll let you know what they come back with.
Okay. Yeah. I was just wondering if I could volunteer to go lock them, like in the evening, and open them in the morning.
We can if ask. That would help.
We can ask.
I don't know if. I think.
Don't want paperwork in Scott.
Well, no. I just go do it on our walk. When we walk down.
We'll certainly approach him with the idea, but I do know that they have been encountering more vandalism, just as we have in our parks, and liability wise. So yeah, we'll let you know what they say.
And another question I had. One of my friends called and said that through their sewer, they're getting these big roaches coming through. Mm. And my question is, do we do any spraying for that in the system? Is there anything that we could maybe do a public something in our newsletter that can tell us as homeowners, what can we put down there to help make those go away?
we had our roach issue last year as well.
Last year, I remember.
And well, stand here so you can correct rampant. Me again. But, you know, we do under Martha's leadership several years ago. We started to do a program of spraying manhole covers, etc. The roaches are not coming out of the sewer system. The roaches are coming just around the manhole covers and around where your
cleanouts.
Where your cleanouts will be, because through the drought and all of that, those roaches like the water. And so they're going to be around those areas with the cleanouts. And so specifically last year, what we advised homeowners is to call pest control, put out roach, you know, good killing stuff around your cleanouts and around anything where there's a little bit of water, because that's what they're looking for, particularly in the dry drought. And if you're closer to the river, you'll get a few more roaches. But the city specifically does treat its manhole covers. And again, the roaches are not in the sewer system itself. There's too much flow going back and forth for it to be.
Well, they said they were coming up like the shower and the tub drains.
So your air vents that go up to the roof, you know, they can, because all of your sewer systems are vented. So they will come through that. And like city manager said, they're seeking wet, damp, moist areas, especially in the drought conditions. They get worse.
Okay. Thank you. One more question I had. In listening to this mental health, Chief Garza, maybe you can respond to this. With the mental health presentation this evening, what do we as a police department and maybe community services, how do we interact with mental health, and is there something more we can encourage them to do out here that would help us with people that are in need of those services?
Oh, absolutely, and good evening, Council. Currently, there is a lot we can do, obviously. Mental health is an issue that all communities are experiencing and trying to find the right solution to it. Mm-hmm. What Fresno County, all the municipal law enforcement agencies in Fresno County, what we did is we all came together and used some of that money that was available through the BSEC, through the realignment money. We partnered with mental health, with Fresno County Behavioral Health, specifically King's View, and what we actually do is we house a mental health clinician here at the police department. And that person is actually responsible for responding out with our officers on all mental health calls that we receive, and they specifically go out with the officer, and they provide the assessment, and they give those people automatic referrals and automatic attention. Mm-hmm. And they actually put them onto the books, where before it was always a couple of days after, you know, the actual incident. Mm-hmm. That someone would put them on their caseload and maybe get out to them if they could. So this mental health clinician who is here now, they work Monday, mm-hmm. they work 7 days a week, and they're in the office from 7 till 11 o'clock at night. Wow. And so they have two shifts, but that person is responsible to respond out to Reedley calls, Sanger, Orange Cove, and Parlier. Okay. But then there's also one that's housed at Selma. And they're responsible for some of those communities. So that's really something that we're doing in law enforcement to help with the issues of mental health. Our Victim Services Collaborative, which is housed down at the MCC office, also deals with some of those issues, and they are able to provide referrals out to folks if they need them. But okay. I think really the biggest thing is just the getting the information out on where they can go. Mm-hmm. Fresno County does have a office here on I Street, on I Street and 11th. Now, but that is much more for a treatment. So if someone's looking for medication or getting a refill for medication, that's where they would go. So Fresno County does have a presence here in Ridley already. And we do identify a lot of those issues that the trying to get folks from Ridley to Fresno. And that's always been an issue that we've had with domestic violence. And we do offer with our victim services, with our victim advocate, Rosalinda Padilla, who works over at the MCC office, to provide that right if people so choose and need it. And stuff. So that's, again, that's a service that we provide. Okay. So we do work closely with mental health.
Okay. I just wasn't sure, and I thought since we had that presentation this evening, I would ask. Are there any services at the community center at all for mental health? No. Any, like, I don't know, would it be a certain time that somebody's out there from...
No, currently we do not offer any mental health services. I know in the senior department, they get people to come in and talk to seniors that need help with different things, but not specifically for mental health. As he was talking, my ears kind of perked up because we are very familiar with the acts that they're doing on the schools and the pushes to help with the young people. Okay. And then he had mentioned maybe senior centers. So definitely something I was going to bring up to Joel and we can look into a little bit more.
I was wondering too, Sarah, if maybe one of those little gardens might be something that the seniors, and we could tap into that funding to get some monies to do something like that.
Correct, because there has been some discussion of possibly doing a garden in the community center and also attracting the seniors, so absolutely. We will definitely look into it.
Yeah, I think Sarah and I both, our little ears perked up when he said community gardens and some funding, because we do have a site set aside. Yep. So.
Exactly.
Okay.
Thank you.
Councilman Fast, if I can add one more thing too. Obviously, this is just not a local issue, mental health, it's a state issue.
No, I know.
And the state has identified, because of Prop 47, the inaction, some of that money is actually going to mental health to deal with some of the mental health issues and stuff. So how that's going to roll itself out to local agencies and counties, that's still yet to be determined, but there is a lot of movement at the state level to make that happen as well. So we're keeping our fingers crossed.
All right. Tap into it.
Absolutely.
I just think it's important that we tell every chance we get when we have somebody from the county here is we need to bring the services to the people, not bring the people to the service.
Right.
So, thank you. I appreciate what you all do to help our people.
Anything else?
That's all. Thank you.
Councilmember Rodriguez?
Just in reference to the League of Cities meeting that we went to, Councilman Beck talked a little bit about it, but it was an excellent presentation, and the things that I think that were presented or were shared, even though Fresno is over 500,000 people, and we look at ourselves as a little rural community over here, maybe 3% of the population that they have, but still, those are the problems that exist in our society, and I think the one thing that, and I heard a little about it tonight even, is like interrelated agencies working, you know, in collaboration and so forth, and providing services, you know, for those folks. I know that the Councilwoman Betancourt had talked a few meetings ago also, like when a family's displaced or there's domestic violence and this and that, you know, where do we put them? What resources do we have? Mm-hmm. Of course, that's somewhat related to, again, to homeless, because they are homeless. They become homeless for that night, if not a couple of nights, till there's some type of resolve. But I was really impressed with their approach, their philosophy. And then when they talked about a hookup system, you know, how do we hook them up? You know, what do we do? And it's like, it was highly stressed that, like, you know, you got to get those people then when they need it, because if you try to hunt them down 24 hours later, they're not around or they change their mind. And and so forth, but they also, I guess the big thing that comes with homeless and the ones that I'm acquainted with here in our community, they that night they shared that 90% of the homeless people are they're either strung out or hung up on alcohol or drugs, self-medicated. Mm-hmm. You know, they're mm-hmm. dependent. And they don't want the help, you know, and so forth. But I think it would behoove us and for something to think about it. And we may have some of these things in place already. I'm not saying we don't, but a process that we have when we're dealing, say, with the 4 or 5 homeless folks that we encounter often in our community, they're having encampment behind a particular, you know, domicile, you know, an empty lot or whatever, or behind a business. Because we know that if we go over there and we talk to them, and I think I talked to our city manager about this, and we say, hey, you can't, you know, this is private property, you can't be here. Well, that person's going to go someplace else. So all we're doing is taking care of the problem right there. If they're, say, sleeping at Kentucky Fried Chicken or whatever, or at the car wash, but they're going to go someplace else. So what do we have as far as our process? And you know, and the documentation that comes with that every time we make contact. So this is now the third time that we're called out here to get this guy off of private property. So documenting that and making sure that we're doing everything that we can as a city, not only for them to adhere to the law and so forth, but also making sure that we do everything possible to hook them up and get them that service. And perhaps, you know, all 5 of them are all the ones that we have who can say, no, I'm not interested, I don't want this, I don't want that. But we still have that dilemma. We still have that issue, you know, that challenge. So by just talking to a person and saying, like, you can't be here and moving along in this and that, it just becomes another business that's going to have that problem or another resident. And so I just, if we can kind of work, I don't know what we have, but if we can kind of work on that as a city, as staff, take a look at what are the bits and pieces we can take, not reinvent the wheel, but we can take what's working for them or what's working for adjacent cities and so forth. But they've taken, and then the next day, what was, maybe not the next day, but 2 days later, what was really interesting is Mayor Swearingen coming out with her plan also as far as what she wanted to do with the budget and continuing to address the homeless problem in Fresno. So, you know, it's like I said, it's a challenge for all the communities. But as I told our city manager, I go, we have 4 or 5 folks that I'm aware of. But if there's not systems and protocols or things that we can do better, then that 4 or 5 can become 10 and so forth. So just taking a look at that. The other thing, and these are just not so much of just a remark, a couple of remarks I want to make, is now that the weather is getting to the point where people are out a lot later at night, I don't fear the joggers or the bike riders like Councilman Beck. I mean, they're out there late and so forth. That's good because they're keeping an eye on our community. But I'm talking more, you know, more so about these. We're having several, you know, parties. You know, I'm beginning to see, to hear a lot of loud music, even in my adjacent area, and just, you know, a little help on that, because I think it's not borderline. I think they're going way over our, you know, the limit as far as, you know, what we have set as far as resolution or what have you. But I think they're going out there into the wee hours of the morning, and it's crazy. I mean, we had a gentleman today, he talked about, I've never heard that horn, I don't know what he's talking about, but I do hear the music and I hear the loud party. So we, you know, getting on that. The other thing I wanted to talk about, there was a, folks probably know this, but it was on the news for the last couple of days as far as Visalia, the city of Visalia, coming out with an ordinance of holding the parents or the homeowner responsible when there's juveniles, anyone under the age of 21 sponsoring a party. Mm-hmm. And that happens in our community, guys, because there's even cover charge with some of these kids coming in at 16, 17, and 18 years old when their parents are away you know, to the coast or visiting relatives or this, that, but they just adopted an ordinance where now that the homeowner would be held responsible and there's a citation, like first time, I think it's $100. The second time it goes up and all the way to, you know, to $500. But something to think about. I don't, you know, Pasadena, like I said, these cities are big and I know they have a lot more folks, but it doesn't mean that we don't have that type of problem at a smaller scale and something that we can, you know, confront and address it before, you know, it gets even a little bigger, because we do have some of that going on in our community. So those are just thoughts on those two things. That's all I have.
Okay. I have only one item. I was approached by a customer that he uses a taxi service in Reedley, and the new doctor's office on G Street. He says there's no handicap parking in front there. I said I haven't noticed, so he was just wondering, because whenever you use the taxi to go to the doctor's office, they drop them off at the corner and then have to wheel them back to the doctor's. So he was just asking, could there possibly be a handicap parking someplace there?
We'll definitely take a look at that. Right now, because that's a parking district for downtown, the doctor's office isn't required to have a handicap space specifically, but that doesn't mean we can't take a look at it and see what we can do.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right, great.
Is there a back entrance to that? That maybe it could be on the back side?
It's a good question. I'm not sure, actually.
I'm not sure.
There
I'm
is?
Trying to think.
Okay. We'll take a look at that and get back to you as well.
Did we ever look into that property behind the doctor's office? We had talked about it one time about possibly purchasing a piece of property to make parking for those businesses.
We've started some conversations.
We have.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I'm looking forward to our new community development director, whenever that person comes on board, continuing those conversations in relation to the library and other things.
Hi, I just wanted to make a comment. Ellen Moore, interim city planner, community development. The conditional use permit that was done or approved for that office, there are 10 spaces in the back. I will double check. I believe one of them was handicap accessible.
In the back?
And, yeah, in the back. So you'd have to go through the alley to get to them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Just wanted to point that out. Thank
Maybe
you.
Should make the taxi company aware of it.
Yeah, but that's a good idea. Go
yeah.
Okay. That's all I have. Staff reports.
Thank you, Mayor. Just to let you know, the 28th of June, we will have a city council meeting. Several agendas ago, we marked that we might go dark. We generally go dark for one or two meetings throughout the summer, but the 28th is very important because that will be the date that we are asking council to authorize the Reed Avenue construction project. And so that's an important date for us. So we certainly will have a council meeting on the 28th. And then the 12th, we have two public hearings specifically, so we know we will have a council meeting on the 12th as well. And so sometime after that, we will let council know when we don't have any items. We generally, around the turn of the fiscal year, we're booked up with the annual contract type of items, but we like to take one or two through the summer and kind of catch up on staff work, et cetera. So we'll let you know when that occurs, but certainly on the 28th and the 12th, for sure, we will have council meetings.
Okay.
Are there any other staff updates? All right. I believe that's all, Mayor.
Great. Well, listen, thank you very much, folks, for our presentation tonight. I think it was a good meeting and a lot accomplished. And I'll adjourn the meeting. Have a nice evening.
Thank you.